stop.
How you doing, everybody? It's Lex and Stacy, Threesome Podcast number 64. Another short edition.
Short-ish.
Yeah, short-ish. Yeah, we've been kind of pushing towards the long in some of these, so.
Yes.
Which is good. It means we got a lot of stuff to talk about.
Yes.
And I like that.
Me too.
On the way over here, I just saw... Well, I listened to, but I was kind of viewing it on my phone a little bit when I could, like at stoplights. Do you know who Jim Harbaugh is?
Oh, the terrible, awkward, awful interview that he got hung up on today?
Yes.
With Colin Cowherd.
Yeah. Did you see it?
No, I've just been cringing and reading about it.
You have to hear it. It is, I'm going to try and pull it up here while we're talking. You won't believe what a piece of shit this guy is.
Now, is he a piece of shit? Or because it just sounded like he was awkward and uncomfortable. Or was he being a dick?
I think he was being a dick. Because if you look at this guy's background at Stanford, at San Francisco 49ers, and now at Michigan, he's had to deal with incredible amounts of media. You know, he's had to do plenty of face-to-face interviews. I've never heard of anything like this with him. I hear he's an intense guy, and he can be somewhat of a difficult or short interview, but never anything like this. out of all the sports guys that I have to endure, one of my genuine pleasures is Colin Cowherd, who I think is great at what he does. A really intense, sharp-witted, really on it type of guy that brings up very off the grid subject matter to talk to people with. And in this case, it was not that at all. Right. It was
so we didn't take him unaware. They were pretty just straightforward questions.
These were as softball as it gets from Colin Cowherd. I think he was just okay. I think he knew who he was dealing with, and was just going to try and have as pleasant an interview as possible. And Jim Harbaugh was not letting it happen. I mean,
is there a history? I mean,
No. I mean, here's the start of the interview right here.
The Herd.
All guests on The Herd appear on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline.
I think I've only met Jim Harbaugh once or twice. He's very intense, but I like intense. Most of my friends are intense. I'm kind of intense. And he's a head football coach at Michigan. And people have to be realistic about this. He didn't get a huge class last year because he came in a little late. So you have never forget, Pete Carroll was 6-6 his first year at USC. You know, you can't turn stuff around overnight. Let's not be unrealistic here, but will he turn it around? Oh, absolutely. Michigan's a traditional power. He can recruit. He knows quarterbacks, and that drives the sport. Jim Harbaugh's joining us. When are you at your least intense? Because you are a pretty intense guy.
Okay, it starts right away.
How are you?
I'm great, Coach. How are you?
Good to hear your voice.
Thank you so much. Is there ever a moment in the day you're like, oh, man, I'm cupcake. I'm soft. I'm easy. When's the part of the day that you are just, you're a pushover?
I don't know. I guess I don't know. Maybe ask Sarah, my wife. I don't know.
Yeah. You know, when you go to Michigan and you take over a program and you're starting out,
I don't know.
Like when you're flying there and you're flying there to take the gig, do you have a yellow pad and you're like, okay, I'm going to do this, this, this? Like, what was the first thing you changed at Michigan?
I don't know what that the very first thing that was changed. You know, maybe altered, but it's just a conversation at a time. You get to work, and you know, I remember that first day, press conference, and then we got to work, hiring the staff, recruiting players, recruiting players that were already on the roster. You know, one conversation at a time, that's how you get to know people.
Yeah. Okay, it starts getting worse.
I watch you on Instagram, and I watch you on Twitter. You're very much into the community. It's like you and not that you weren't everywhere else, but it does feel different at Michigan because of your history there. It does for me. When I watch you, you really seem to be all in.
Yeah, I would agree. can't disagree with that.
What do you think? You know, because, Jim, I didn't think you'd go to Michigan. What was the day like you decided? Where were you?
I don't know if there was a day.
I mean, he's given him nothing.
Time.
I know. I was going to say, it's an experiment in how you can say nothing with a bunch of words.
Football. I love coaching.
It gets worse, believe it or not.
So, feel very blessed. I guess I have an attitude of gratitude that I'm able to be a part of this game and be a part of this great university.
Oh, what are realistic expectations?
Easy question.
Realistic expectations are that we're going to be better today than we were yesterday. Be better tomorrow than we were today. That's our plan for success. So simple, it just might work.
Yeah. What college football coaches, NFL coaches, Jim, I don't know the difference hours-wise. Is your day that much different, college to pro?
I don't know how much different. There's more similarities than there are differences, actually, Colin.
Like how? I mean, basically, you get in early, you leave late. It's the same.
Yeah, that would be a similarity.
I said,
coaching football, building a team, same, more similarities than differences, I would say.
Future of the Big Ten. You're at Michigan. Urban Meyer at Ohio State. James Franklin.
When I look at these coaches,
I say elite recruiters, elite coaches. I said this yesterday. The Big Ten feels like it's a bye for me. Like, can you sense? Do you have a sense of that and a feel for the conference overall?
The Big Ten feels like a bye to you.
Yeah, it does. Because
how does it feel that way?
You don't see that?
No, I don't. You explain that to me. I don't.
Well, because the bottom line. Well, I mean, let's be honest.
Okay, I can see where you get this wrong.
Ohio State's a heavyweight. They now both have great coaches. It feels like the Big Ten is on the come. It feels like there's momentum in the conference that I didn't feel.
Oh, a buy, like something to buy,
yeah,
as opposed
stop.
To sell.
Yes.
Oh, I thought buy week or buy.
That's what I thought he meant too. To be honest.
Okay.
Yeah. That's what it feels like to me. Does it feel like that to you?
This is where it starts getting ugly.
It feels very competitive to me.
Mm-hmm.
At the highest level of college football.
Season opens September 3rd at Utah. Coach, when do you put in a game plan? How does it work?
It's a process. It's been going on for months and will continue over the next 2 months. Mm-hmm.
You're not a rear-view mirror guy, it doesn't seem like. You're kind of forge your way, go, get stuff.
This feels like one of those where you ask like 50 questions on a...
Here we go.
You're not giving me a ton to work with, Coach, so I just want to find something out about Jim Harbaugh, the human being.
Okay.
I want to find out about Jim Harbaugh. I'm a player right now, and I want to play for a bunch of schools. I'm listening to Jim Harbaugh. I want to play for Jim. Well, I mean...
Do you have any eligibility, Colin?
This is where he becomes a dick.
Damn. What I'm saying is I'm trying to kind of... I want Jim Harbaugh, the guy. Because I bring all these coaches on, and I want the guy. I mean, what? I'm a 4-3 wide receiver. Why should I play at Michigan?
You are?
No, if I was. This seems terribly difficult.
God, it's so uncomfortable. I love
it. This is just not work. I love you to death. I really do. But it seems like we're going nowhere with this. And I love you. I'm a huge Harbaugh fan.
Well, okay, what can I do to make your interview better?
You can't. I'm just asking open-ended questions, and you have not much to say. I want you to sell your program. That's why I bring Urban on, and I bring Steve Sark. I love you guys. I want you to sell your program. Listen, I love you. It's not working. I appreciate you stopping by, Jim Harbaugh. I've been in the business 10 years, folks. That was a clunker. There's not much I can do.
Yeah.
I asked every open-ended question I could. You got nothing to say.
Well, that's awesome.
There you go.
Awesome.
Could it possibly be? Your decades and decades of being in radio and doing it 5 hours a day, 5 days a week, there are times, moments in your life where words escape you and you just have nothing interesting to say.
No. No. I show up to be fucking amazing every day. You know, there's only one interview I can think of where I was so starstruck and so fucking in disbelief that we had this person on the phone that I turned into Chris Farley. And that was Arnold Palmer.
Really?
Yeah.
All the people in the world, and it was Arnold Palmer?
You have to understand, Arnold Palmer and my dad were friends.
Ah.
My dad had Arnold Palmer on a pedestal for me from the moment I knew what sports was. And, you know, pounded into my head that this is the greatest human being and golfer on the planet. And an amazing person and a great ambassador for the game. And he just does everything right. And everybody else is a piece of shit and, you know, all this stuff. And, you know, it was like my dad was over my shoulder while I'm interviewing this guy. And I'm thinking to myself, well, Terry's got this if I don't. So no problem. Same thing. I mean, we were like
Terry's dad too.
We were like, listen, did you play golf today? You didn't. Oh, do you play golf a lot? You know, I mean, that's what it was like. It was just like, oh my God, it's Arnold fucking Palmer. This is crazy. In the meantime, you know, we bash and humiliate some of the biggest actors on the planet when they come on. You know?
Yes.
Yeah, and think nothing of it. They're nothing. But you know, for some reason that fucking day, neither he or I were completely just blown away. And he's even trying to help us because you know Arnold Palmer's just like a media fucking genius. You know,
right.
I mean everybody loves to interview him. He always has like a colorful story. You know, he has the formula, the colorful story, the acting like he's friends with the interviewer to endear him to them. I mean, he knows how to do it all. You just feel like you're Arnold's buddy. You're in the inner sanctum. You know what's going on with Arnold. You hang with Arnold. You guys are buds. You know, I mean, he just has it down. And he right. did all that, and he set us up. All we had to do was hit the ball off the tee into the fucking bleachers, and we struck out. And he just kind of snickered when the interview was over. Like it's like those poor guys.
But it happened. That's one instance where it happened. Maybe this was Jim Harbaugh's Arnold Palmer interview.
No, he was being a dick.
Probably. You know, but I'm just trying to find the good thing.
And you can see it in the part. You can see it in the part where, you know, he goes, I'm a 4-3 wide receiver. You know, why do I want to play for you? You know, it'd be so easy for him to just go, God, man, we're going to throw the ball all over the place. Whoever ends up playing quarterback for us is going to be a lucky guy. We're going to let him loose and give him an opportunity to make big plays. I mean, he could have said all that shit. You know, if you're some high school kid sitting out there, you're like, oh, fuck yeah, I'll wear the maize and blue and go play for this guy. But instead, I'd be like, fuck that.
I'm not, going to Michigan State.
Not when you have you know what's his name, D'Antonio? Is that his name?
I think so.
This guy's a great fucking coach, you know, and has had great teams the last 5 years. You got Urban Meyer coming to your backyard, you know, Franklin at Penn State. You got all these fucking stud coaches, you know, that are recruiting kids to play in the Big Ten, and you know, I go play for one of them instead of him. I'll tell you that right now. And it's like, I don't want to deal with that guy on a bad day. Fuck that. You know, and the 49er players got exasperated by him. As good as they were and at the top, you know, the fact they were at the top of football while he was there, you know, it's like the air let out when he left.
Well, I can say as someone who went to Michigan State, let him be that way.
Yes.
Please, let him continue to be that way.
No, I mean, Michigan State's the football school in Michigan and has been for almost close to 10 years now.
Yes. I am well aware.
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, it's kind of weird. You know, they were talking to Urban Meyer. This was like, you know, coaches Ohio State. This is like 2 years ago. They were saying, you know, he got that big Michigan Ohio State game at the end of the year, and he kept correcting them and going, yeah, Michigan State's the one I'm worried about.
Good.
You know, that's the team that's in our way from winning the Big Ten, not Michigan right now. No disrespect, but that's true based on facts of last year's records, you know. And Florida Georgia gets like that sometimes. You know, sometimes one of them's not at the top of the heap. You know, most of the time both of them are, but usually there's one who's downtrodden and a little bit off, you know, for a couple of years, and that's just the way it goes. So, you know, we'll see what he does. He's going to make Michigan better.
Yes.
Because, you know, a lot of disciplinarian-type dads will love a guy like him. They'll tell their kid, you go play there, you have an empty checkbook. You don't, I'm not giving you shit.
It's like boot camp.
Yeah. Yeah. And,
football boot camp.
And he'll get his share of great players, you know, and he was down recruiting in Alabama, getting Nick Saban all pissed off. I mean, he'll find a way to win. He's that good, but I wouldn't want to fucking play for him.
Mr. Personality.
Yeah. I mean, there's just too many cool fucking college coaches out there, like the guy at West Virginia, the Dana Holgerson or whatever his name is. Holgerson, I think his name is. He has all that wild fucking hair, and he's like, you know, always like pumping his fist. And he's like, yeah, fuck yeah. You know, I mean, it's like a
Nashville pussy.
Yeah, exactly. Saying, everybody wins, we win, we'll all be fucking tonight. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, and he's an offensive genius type of guy, you know, so he's got all these fast receivers and running backs and quarterbacks are like, yeah, I want to go there and throw to all those guys. You know, so I can go to the NFL. But man, that
there was a story back in the winter. I think it was after football, I think. I'm trying to think. But anyway, it was just since he got hired at Michigan, and there was some car accident like on one of the highways in Detroit, and this woman, you know, was kind of banged up, you know, waiting for like the ambulance and stuff,
and
this guy pulled her over. Yeah, this man was being very attentive and making sure she's okay and being very nice, you know, and all this. And then she finds out later that it was, you know, Jim Harbaugh that had pulled over and was taking care of her.
Yeah, and you know,
that kind of, you know, switches some points there from good to bad, kind of.
And that's the maddening part about him. That shit's been there his whole fucking career. He's been that guy that does something really fucking cool for somebody that doesn't even play football, and then he can't handle a softball. I mean, that was a softball interview, was it not?
Yeah.
I mean, Colin Cowherd is famous for asking really twisted, fucked up, difficult questions if he gets somebody, you know, on their heels. You know, he'll go for the jugular. He had an opportunity there to, early in the interview, to go, you got to give me fucking more, coach. I at my place in life would have been two questions into him and gone, oh, okay, I see how this is going to go. Don't feel like talking.
That's when I would have started fucking back, you know, with the so, you know. What's your, you know, pregame ritual? Yeah. You know, just weird shit, you know. Yeah. Do you take a big dump before or after the game?
I would have been there on question one. It's like, so we got to call your wife to find out when you're not a dick? What's her name,
Someone
Sarah?
Someone having their man period.
Yeah, can I have Sarah's phone number so we can call her and she can let us know instead of you when you're actually take a few minutes off from being an intense asshole?
Intense asshole.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, it's good. You know, I mean, we've had interviews over the years with people. You know, the Gary Busey is the most famous one. Actually, we've had two with Gary Busey that went poorly. The first one went so poorly, we couldn't wait to have the second one.
Now, the first one was Scott, right?
The first one was Scott.
Okay, I think I was there for that one, but I don't think I was in the studio when it happened. Because it was like off air or something, wasn't it?
No,
you guys were someplace else.
We were down and at the Super Bowl.
Okay.
We were down on Radio Row at the Super Bowl. And he was doing a call-in, so Scott had to handle it. And the audio of him and Scott talking was amazing.
Yes. That's what I remember.
Yeah.
Scott at his very best.
Yeah. Yeah, Scott was just not having it. He's like, are you coming on? Do you not want to come on? What are we doing? You know, I mean, it was fucking magic. And we're sitting out there. He's like, you guys ready for me to throw this to you? We're like, no. No, you're doing great. He's like, whatever. He goes, you know, I'm uncomfortable. I'm like, listen.
Scott was like a combination, like, producer radio guy, you know, handling that stuff. But then there was also a part of him that was, I want to say, like, Annie Potts in Ghostbusters, that, like, really put upon office manager, business person, you know what I mean? Like, the receptionist who's like, you know, I'm not taking your shit.
Yeah, my favorite part of Scott was we were in Nashville when they got their hockey franchise, and he goes, you're interviewing Barry Trotz. And he goes, I think he's the goalie. And we're like, okay. So we don't do our research, you know. We don't have internet handy or anything like that. And it turns out he's the head coach. And we're...
Big difference there.
And we are talking to him about boinking chicks and, you know, and players, you know. Like, I mean, we're talking... And he's like, oh, geez, I don't know about that. You know, I... And we're like, oh, like, you know, come on. You guys have all gangbanged somebody. I know you have, you know. And we find out after the interview. Yeah. And Terry tears into Scott. You know, he's like, Jesus fucking Christ. It was the head coach, you motherfucker. And all this stuff. And Scott goes, sorry. And it's just a great Scott moment. Scott was too funny and too good to be a producer, and too scared of his own shadow to be a frontline performer. He didn't trust himself on how funny he was, and to me, he was the funniest guy on the fucking show.
I would agree, and I'm not being mean.
Yeah, in a different sort of way, you know. I mean, he had to be set up to be funny. He, you know, in fairness,
he's the guy who could go like the whole show where you don't hear from him. You know, it's just a quiet. You guys are doing your thing, and then he says the one thing.
Yeah, or plays the
and
one.
And it's just plays the one drop. You know, and it's just genius.
Yeah, and that's exactly who he was. You know, he provided. He was quality, not quantity.
Yes.
You know, but
perfect.
But you know, it's like, you know, he understood the difference between having to carry a 5-hour show and, you know, and doing it himself. You know, because you know we had to have that discussion with him a couple of times where it's like, hey, you fucking do this. You know, let me sit over there and drop some time drops and sound effects and shit like that. Believe me, you'll need me. You know, it's a different deal, dude. He goes, you know, and finally one day we were got caught somewhere or something, and he had to do the show, and you know, for like 20 minutes tops. You know, it was and after the show, he's like, okay, I'll never say anything again. I'm like, yeah, right? It's like, this shit ain't easy.
I know there were times when you guys were, like, on vacations and stuff. You know, there was, like, minimal banter, but, you know, there are those times, like, having to intro the best of and that stuff, you know, and it's like, this sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, but he, to me, he's one of the funnier human beings I've ever met. I mean, he has a really dark, you know, sinister sense of humor that yes. I deeply appreciate. I have deep love for Scott. Awesome dude. So, other than that, man, that's, I'm trying to think outside of Gary Busey. You never heard the second Gary Busey interview, did you?
I don't think so, no.
Okay, the star of that one was Taint, who was Gary Busey has a hearing problem, and he was on The Apprentice. He was going to be on The Apprentice.
Okay.
And this is like 3 or 4 years ago. And Taint, there was one part where he's like, talking about something on The Apprentice, and he goes, it's like magic. And Taint goes, do you like magic, Gary? Or something like that. But it's like we all went into tears. You know, it was just so well timed and so well dropped, and it's like we were useless. And he's like, what? He goes, I'm not hearing anything. And then, you know, Taint just saw it as a license to just say whatever the fuck he wanted to because Gary couldn't hear him. And it was, it's still, when I hear it, like on Best Ofs and stuff, it's like, shut up, I want to hear this. It's too fucking funny.
Has he ever been on again? Will he never be on again?
Oh, I'm sure he'll be on again. I mean, it's not like he knew it was us from the first time. He doesn't get it. You know, and yet you have a guy like Mark Wahlberg on who is like, knows who we are. Yeah, he's like, back again, guys, promoting another movie, you know. And there was an uncomfortable moment with him like 3 or 4 interviews ago where Terry questioned the quality of The Departed.
Really?
Yeah, and he's like, Mark, you know, did you get the ending of that? I mean, did you get it? You know, was it? Do you think it was? You think that was a good ending? And you know, he was like, yeah, it was a good ending. It was a good movie. You know, it's, you know, obviously the stats speak for themselves. You know, so yeah, it's fine. He goes, well, what about it? Don't you get? And Terry makes a case for why the ending sucks. And it wasn't I understood where he was coming from, that it was kind of right. A confusing ending, and one of the characters was not set up well enough for you to understand that that was a great ending. You know, it's like somebody got over at the end that, you know, wasn't supposed to, but that character had minimal portrayal in the movie to make you not appreciate it as much if he had been like a lead character. You know what I mean?
I've never seen the movie.
He kind of like came out of the woodwork at the end to be an integral part of the movie and was not set up enough like the rest of the characters. And so when he won in the end, it was like, what? Yeah, well, Terry challenges him on this, and it got real fucking uncomfortable. And
he just starred in it. He didn't direct it or write it or have anything else to do with it. Correct.
I think he just starred in it. Yeah, and he was like, oh, you know, he goes, hey, we disagree on this, you know, and all that stuff, and you know, it just got fucking weird and all that. So we're like, okay, well, he won't be on anymore. Thanks a lot, Terry. And then he came on the next time and remembered who we were. And even if he didn't, Terry brought it up. He said, hey, last time you were on, you know, it got a little weird. I'm sorry about that. And, you know, and Mark goes, oh, you're the guy that hated the fucking Departed, you know, or whatever. And he's like, sorry, I'm trying to stop swearing, you know, and I have kids now and everything. He says, you have to excuse me. I just threw everybody out of my house yesterday when the Patriots lost. Yeah. And that was the Super Bowl where the guy caught, like, the ball in his face mask or whatever, you know, for the Giants. The Patriots were trying to go 19-0, and the guy, like, made that fucking crazy catch in the Super Bowl for the Giants. And
was that with, Eli?
Yeah, David Tyree, I think his name was. It's like the only catch the guy ever made, and then he never played again or something like that. But it, remember, he like caught it with like the tips of his fingers and fell backwards, you know. And they ended up losing when Plaxico Burress caught the ball. And he's like, I threw everybody out of my house. I was so fucking pissed off. and he's been a cool interview ever since. We had him on about Ted the other day. And which, by the way, was great. You gotta see Ted.
I saw Ted. Have you talked about Ted 2?
Ted 2 is even better.
Okay, really?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, a little swearing fucking bear, it never gets old to me. I don't know.
No, I understand. I get that totally.
And to me, the star of the movie is like, you know who Putty was on Seinfeld, right? You know, Elaine's boy. Yes. You know, and then he was on that other TV show. He's just kind of a dry dude. Well, he plays this gay dude with this other big black guy as his partner, and at the end of the movie they end up at Comic-Con and he's dressed up like in a Superman outfit and the black guy's dressed up as a Klingon, and they're a gay couple, but they're just fucking with nerds, you know. It's like this guy walks by with this big ass Coke, this and they just slap it in his face and start laughing. They're like the biggest dick gay guys ever. And it's so fucking good. Though the way they introduce that character is, it's just a great movie. I laugh my ass off through the whole thing.
Have you ever had Tina Fey on?
Tina Fey is my ultimate girl crush, and I'm sorry to say,
mine too. Actually,
I'm sorry to say, I've never gotten to have the pleasure of taking her to bed.
You need to work on that. You need to get her on so then I can live vicariously through you.
Oh, God. That would be like the Arnold Palmer interview with me. I'm just like, I love you. I want to fuck your brain. You're so fucking awesome.
Yes.
I want a threesome with you and Kristen Wiig so fucking bad.
See, for me, it would be a threesome with Tina Fey and Rachel Maddow. Don't judge.
Well, at least you're guaranteed to watch one of them eat pussy. So I understand. Instead of having to talk them into it, which is so exasperating. You know, especially after you've come all over both their faces.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. This is me just speculating.
Silly girls.
This is me just speculating.
Did you ever see... Do you watch... oh, shit. What's her... It's just totally... oh, crap. She does the Comedy Central show. The blonde.
Oh, oh, God.
I know, it just went
Schumer.
Away. Yes, her. God, yeah. I can't believe that.
You mean,
did you ever see the last fuckable day?
Samantha in 10 years?
I think she's cute as a button.
Oh, I do too.
But did you ever see the last fuckable day sketch?
No.
With Tina Fey and Julia Louise Dreyfus and Patricia Arquette?
No.
Oh, you should.
Oh, I'll look it up.
Yes, it'll do the uncensored one. It's on YouTube.
Yeah, we you know the phrase, you know, when people say something like, and they'll go like, yeah, I got pulled over by a cop today and got a ticket, and then on my way home I dropped out my groceries, and then I got a flat tire, and then I got to the house and my dog had shit all over the floor. So there's that. Yeah. She's yes. The so there's that girl. And we had this girl call up our app. You can call our app and and make a message.
Okay.
And we have this crazy bitch that calls from Jacksonville called Drunk Denise. And she goes, I went into Jacksonville and I went out and had drinks with Drunk Denise and almost live to not talk about it. So there's that. And I went, oh my God, she started a whole movement. Amy Schumer has.
I love her. I think she's very funny.
Oh God, she's awesome. Her, did you ever watch The Burn with Jeffrey Ross?
No.
When it was on? Look up some old episodes if you can. It's probably on Netflix or iTunes by now. But there's this one, I think it's the first show, where he goes to, who was Jimmy Kimmel's girlfriend for the longest time?
Sarah Silverman.
Sarah Silverman. He goes to her apartment, and he's just looking around the apartment, you know, and fucking with her. And she's, you know, her retorts back are just as good. And he goes, oh, your toilet. He goes, how many babies have you flushed down this thing? She's like, you know, she's like, 10, 12, I don't know. And she goes into her bedroom, and on her bed's her dog. And he goes, this is your dog? And she goes, yeah. He goes, how old is it? And she goes, oh, he's 18. He goes, I'm sorry, I'm not going to be here tomorrow to console you.
Nice.
But it's like, and then he did one with her, like in the third episode or so, same type of deal. And they're fucking great. You just gotta, the whole episode's great. It's just him blowing shit on people. And
see, I could not stand Sarah Silverman until, and this would have been years now ago, but it was when Paris Hilton went to jail. Remember that media firestorm?
Yeah.
And it was like Sarah hosted, I think, like the MTV Awards right after Paris had gotten, either was about to go into jail or had just gotten out of jail. And the absolute ass ripping that Sarah Silverman gave Paris there, and the camera, as all award shows do, like there was someone kneeling down with the camera right in Paris's face, so she had to maintain that fake little smile, like I'm totally cool with everything she's saying.
Yeah,
but you could tell she wasn't. And I went, okay, Sarah Silverman isn't as bad as what I thought.
Yeah, my favorite moment like that was what's Tyler Perry was in the audience of the Justin Bieber roast.
Uh-huh.
And there was this young comic from Saturday Night Live whose dad died in 9/11. And this line was so fucking awesome, you know, because he had already set up earlier in the show that his dad died in 9/11, you know, and so everybody already knew. So he goes, Tyler Perry, I just saw your movie on the flight out here. Let me tell you, that's the worst thing that's ever happened to me involving an airplane.
Nice.
And the audience erupted, and I'm like, what's so funny? Oh, God, that's awesome. Dad dies in 9/11. That's the worst thing that's ever happened to me involving an airplane. And Tyler Perry's just shaking his head like, wow, dude, that's cold.
Why does he put his name at the beginning of everything he does?
Because he can. He's filthy fucking rich, and I would do the same thing. I'm sorry.
Well, you did.
Just so
Lex and Terry.
Yeah, see?
It's Lex Daly's Lex and Terry.
Yeah. Lex Daly's Lex and Terry. Yeah.
I triple dog dare you.
Yeah. I'll do it tomorrow.
Tell me how that goes. That will be awesome.
Yeah. And I'll promote it. I'll promote his podcast while I'm doing it. It's like, hey, don't forget to listen to the Terry James Alive podcast. Now back to Lex Daly's Lex and Terry.
Oh my God, yes. Yes, yes. I guarantee you will hear his asshole slam shut all the way from Seattle.
No, he'll laugh his ass off. He's fine. All right, so let's wrap this up, Stacy. Speaking of planes, in the next podcast, we need to talk some Paris Hilton a little bit. Somebody did a very terrible thing to her.
And I love it. Yeah. I think it's the best thing that ever happened.
And obviously you have disdain for Paris Hilton, and I don't know why. We'll go ahead and talk about it. And and we'll get to that in the next podcast. But until then, number 64 is in the books. We'll see you next time.
Bye.